overcast, rain likely Friday evening.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We've got to talk about the blame game that is going on right now, about why it is that Portland all of a sudden decided to clean up that mess down at the ICE headquarters, and you're being told a pack of lies by most of the legacy cartel media. I'll get into the details of that in a moment. First, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join what we call, and always have called it, the best conversation in talk journalism, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I'll get into the details of that, because I think in many cases, the blame for something really doesn't matter. But in this case, it makes a major difference who gets the blame and why all of a sudden, after 140 days of riots and other activity, arrests, attacks on police, attacks on ICE, attacks on a building, why it is that all of a sudden Portland decided to quickly clean the mess up. But let me get to that in just a moment. If you want to send an email, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today might interest you, because this weekend there are millions who are going to lose their SNAP benefits, otherwise known as food stamps. And we found out something really fascinating about that. I want to share that number with you with a soundbite in just a moment. But first, the question is, should Donald Trump or the Democrats get the blame for millions of Americans due to lose their SNAP benefits this weekend? And why are they going to lose their SNAP benefits? Because the federal government was shut down almost a month ago, 28 days ago, the federal government shut down. And when the federal government shuts down, there are paychecks that stop happening. There are government contracts that stop being paid. And one of the things that stops is SNAP benefits. Now, one of the things you're going to hear, and I guarantee you're going to hear this, you're going to hear 42 million Americans are due to lose their SNAP benefits. Only it's not 42 million Americans. It is less than half that number of Americans and more than half that number of illegal aliens and foreign nationals in the United States. And how do I know that? I'm going to cite the reporting of Newsmax, but it comes from an organization that I've had. I don't have any financial relationship with the Center for Immigration Studies, but I've had a longstanding relationship as a reporter, as a talk journalist, with talking to CIS. CIS, in my estimation, does some of the best numbers when it comes to immigration. And the Center for Immigration Statistics has the number that describes how many Americans and how many non-Americans are going to lose SNAP benefits. Newsmax and Derek Evans reported that last night.
There are 42 million people in this country that need food stamps on a weekly basis. And we're saying people deliberately instead of Americans, because most of the people that are on food stamps aren't even from this country. 45% of Afghanistan immigrants are on food stamps, 42% of Somali immigrants, 34% of every immigrant from Iraq, 23% of Haitians, 59% of all illegal aliens are collecting food stamps, meaning that most of the people getting food stamps from the U.S. government and the U.S. taxpayer are not even Americans.
Now, does that put it in a little bit of a different light? When you hear, and I have seen this myself, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, Oregon Live, has a front page story, at least front page as their website gets, and it features a young lady sitting there at a playground with a very small toddler-aged child. And it tells this sad story about how mom and her child are on SNAP benefits, and that her child is going to lose SNAP benefits in the month of November. and then the article, just to squeeze that extra measure of sympathy out of you, says this child is celebrating his birthday in the month of November. Now, is that significant? Oh, well, it's very sympathetic. Is it significant? Is it significant that mom, who looks to be an able-bodied working-age young adult, is not out working a job? Well, because she has a child, the SNAP rules do not require her to work a job. Although I could imagine that if I had found myself in that situation in my 20s, if I'd been a single dad — I wasn't, but if I was a single dad and said, I have to provide for my child, but I should be working a job to bring in income — I could imagine making an arrangement with another person in my same situation. Doesn't have to be a romantic arrangement, but you could have said, look, I need somebody to take care of my child while I'm at my job. Why don't we work this out? So I work a night shift, you work a day shift, I'll take care of your child, you take care of mine. That is not being done by most of the people in that situation. They are glad to collect those public benefits and they don't have to work a job. But when you find out that more than half the people collecting SNAP benefits in America are not Americans, number one, and that a stunning number, 59%, are illegally in the United States, does that change your sympathies when it comes to an issue like food stamps, which are due to run out this weekend, unless the federal government goes back into operation? And that decision is entirely in the hands of the Democrat Party, which I believe wants Americans on SNAP to feel the pain. They want to have them feel the pain so the Democrat Party can then say it's the evil orange man in the White House who's making you feel that pain. That is the political angle that they're playing right now. So our poll on X: should Trump or the Democrats be blamed for millions of people losing their SNAP benefits this weekend, including a majority of recipients who are illegal aliens? Now, let me get back to the ICE headquarters and what's going on. What did the dimwits at the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper say about this? They promised in a headline, we will explain to you why the ICE headquarters and the Antifa encampment that has been besieging the ICE headquarters got a quick cleanup this past weekend. 30 cops sent in trucks and everything else to cart away all that garbage, not just garbage, but all the supplies that have been brought in by the people from Antifa. And what they quote is, they say, Mayor Keith Wilson said on Monday the confrontations and violence Wilson says they spurred rose to a new level in the latter half of last week. So in other words, they let all this go on for 140 days in a row, and then all of a sudden decided just days before the temporary restraining order on Donald Trump's use of the National Guard in Portland is due to expire at about 5 o'clock tonight. And that's the decision. It wasn't because Donald Trump is going to send the National Guard. It isn't because the courts have said, you were wrong, the president does have the authority to send the National Guard. It was because finally Keith Wilson woke up from his long slumber of 4+ months and said, hey, it's getting violent down there. Maybe we should go down and clean it up. Now, if you buy that kind of nonsense, you're probably somebody who actually believes what the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper writes on a regular basis. We know the city made the decision because Donald Trump gets the go-ahead at 5 o'clock tonight to send the National Guard. That's what Portland is afraid of. They are afraid that Donald Trump is going to clean up in short order what the governor and the mayor and all their cronies have allowed to fester for the last 140 days. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, 4444 for details about credit costs and terms.
Broadcasting the sound of freedom, here's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right, you know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media.
Well, 28 days have passed since the Democrats shut down our federal government. The House voted to pass funding back in July. That was a bipartisan vote. So was the effort to pass it in the Senate, with Republicans, independents, and a couple of Democrats voting yes. Most Democrats voted no. Republicans added nothing new to the bill. They didn't cut anything from the spending, although I think they would have liked to have if they could have. Democrats demanded $1.4 trillion in new spending over the next 10 years. In a few days, tens of millions lose their food stamps. Republican governors like Glenn Youngkin of Virginia promised to tide the program over with state money till federal funding returns. Now, Governors Tina Kotek and Bob Ferguson, they could do the very same thing that Youngkin is doing. But Kotek and Ferguson believe that shortchanging the groceries of 1.5 million citizens in the Pacific Northwest plays to their political advantage. The two Democrats believe you will blame the evil orange man in the White House when your EBT card beeps empty. I suggest you don't fall for it. Half a dozen Democrats in the U.S. Senate control that funding. If they vote yes, the government goes back into operation and the EBT cards fill back up. Wyden, Merkley, Cantwell, and Murray could provide two-thirds of the votes needed. All four of them are Democrats, and all four voted to starve the poor. This bunch thinks it can turn hungry bellies into votes at election time. I want you to prove them wrong. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Scott Kaiser has today's question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, and no surgery, and you get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Scott writes, let's talk about Christine Drazen running for governor again. Since losing her first race, what has she actually done? Other than taking out two good Republicans, there's not much to show besides some photo ops. She spent plenty of time criticizing the current governor, but what has she accomplished since taking James Teeb's seat in the Senate? A move that seemed more about ego than of service, signed Scott. And my favorite expose to the day, also about Christine Drazen. Representative Dwayne Junker posted, let's be clear. I'm not endorsing anyone for Oregon governor, but my prediction from 4 days ago has already aged like fine wine. The Democrats' 2026 campaign boils down to one word, Trump. Doesn't matter who's on the ballot, they're going to try to run against Trump, even if Trump isn't in the room. Christine Drazen is not Donald Trump. She's never been Trump. She couldn't even do a good Trump impression, writes Dwayne Junker. But hey, when you have no solutions, yelling Trump is apparently the plan. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I want to give today's Daily Grill. We haven't given to him in quite a while. Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates of Microsoft fame. To Bill Gates for pushing a climate doomsday scenario for the last couple of decades, and then just this week decides to do a complete 180. He abandoned his doomsday climate hoaxing. He said, there's a doomsday view of climate change that goes like this. In a few decades, cataclysmic climate change will decimate civilization. The evidence is all around us. Just look at the heat and waves and storms caused by rising global temperatures. Nothing matters more than limiting the rise in temperature. Yeah. And now today he says, well, it's not going to be that bad. Might be tough on some poor countries, but otherwise it won't be that bad. We will survive. So all of a sudden, after pushing society to make literally trillions of dollars of change in energy production, abandoning nuclear power, abandoning coal, abandoning anything involving fossil fuels, including natural gas, and pushing wind and solar, all of a sudden Bill Gates says, it wasn't going to be that bad after all. Shame on you, Bill Gates. Today's best email of the day that you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it done myself. I hired them to do it for me. It's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Greg Dawson writes in, Lars, I really try not to sound like a paranoid psycho, but I dusted off my abacus today and something didn't add up. Today, Portland police asked Antifa to leave, and they just packed up and left. I have no idea who gave PPB the order to disperse Antifa and who gave Antifa the order to obey PPB. If that was possible today, why wasn't it possible 4 months ago? It sure sounds like the police were allowing Antifa to run amok in Portland on purpose. And if the police were not allowing it, they weren't allowing it without authorization from the mayor and the city council. Further, Governor Kotek was well aware of the situation in Portland. She could have called in the Oregon National Guard if she felt the police were not equipped to deal with Antifa, or simply passed the word for police to get rid of Antifa. It sure looks to me like Antifa has been causing all kinds of damage and grief to Portland business and Portland residents with the blessing of the entire state and city government. And it seems the state police have been complicit as well. What the heck is going on here? How do we get to the bottom of this? And how do we deal with the scum we find at the bottom once we get there? Signed, Greg. To your calls now. It's a Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. And I'm going to go first to naysayer Ty. Hey, Ty, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Anything you say about Trump? I got a fun little game, though, I thought you'd enjoy playing. It's called Truth, Lies, Fake News, or He's Being Sarcastic. I'm going to read off a Trump quote, and you have to tell me if it's true.
No, I don't have to answer your questions at all. I ask you what we disagreed about. This is not your chance to turn this around and make it your talk show. What do we disagree about?
Here's the first one. I will end the war on day one, and it'll be easy.
Exaggeration and hyperbole.
Fake news.
I just gave it to you.
He's being sarcastic? Is that what
you're saying? No, I said hyperbole. Every politician in the world engages in hyperbole. Trump does, too. So what?
Right. Okay,
so what?
Here's the next one.
Well, what's your... No, I'm not doing a quiz with you. This is not an invitation for you to quiz me. If you disagree with me, feel free to say so. Feel free to say, I don't think I'm getting the truth from Donald Trump. I get my truth from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or I get my truth from Bernie Sanders, or I get my truth from Chuck Schumer, or I get my truth from Nancy Pelosi. You can say any of those things and tell me what we disagree about. What you don't get to do is either A, put words in my mouth, or B, engage in a mandatory quiz for me. So what do we disagree about?
I know nothing about Project 2025.
He doesn't. He didn't write it. He didn't commission it. He didn't endorse it. It was written by the Heritage Foundation. And if you did your research, you'd understand. I've actually read Project 2025. Fact is, it's full of some really decent conservative ideas. Now, did Trump get involved in it? No. Did he endorse it when it came out? No. Was there anything evil in it? Do you know, I heard more reporters and people just like you who think Project 2025 is a boogeyman. Except when you actually take a look at it, it's full of really good ideas. Fact is, Donald Trump didn't write it, he didn't adopt it, and he didn't endorse it. So there you have it. Thank you, Todd.
The Lars Larson Show. You're listening because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and one of the biggest things coming up on November the 6th is going to be oral arguments before the Oregon State Supreme Court about whether Measure 114, barely passed by voters, tiny little margin, about 3 years ago. And I thought we'd check in with Kevin Sterrett, who heads up the Oregon Firearms Federation, about the status of not only that case before the Oregon Supreme Court, but the other cases that were in federal court. Kevin, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars.
Let's start with the other cases first. There are still some other cases still pending in federal court challenging Measure 114.
That's correct. Our federal lawsuit is in the Ninth Circuit being appealed from Karen Emmergut, whose name you've come to know so well.
Oh, my God.
Her decision to completely ignore the Supreme Court dictates and find Measure 114 constitutional. But I truly believe that the Ninth Circuit has no intention of acting on our case, and you and I will long be gone before anything happens there.
Okay, let's go back to the Oregon State case, and that is Measure 114, found by a Harney County Circuit Court judge to be unconstitutional. A plain reading of Section 27 out of the state constitution shows that Measure 114, which is a de facto ban on all gun purchases by all civilians in the state of Oregon, of course it's unconstitutional. What do you expect to happen when the state Supreme Court hears this case next week?
Well, what I expect to happen is that the Marxist judges who were appointed by Marxist governors will find it completely constitutional. Of course, that's, you know, you can never know for sure, but that is my guess. It's hard to imagine that they reach any other conclusion. But if they do reach another conclusion, it might not matter that much, because if they find it constitutional, you can rest assured that the Oregon legislature will do everything they can, like they did last session, to shutter whatever remaining gun stores are there. And the Republican opposition will do nothing except assume that someone else is going to sue over it.
And by the way, they have driven most of the gun stores out of business. I did ads, and I was a spokesperson for Northwest Armory for about 20 years. That gun store has been diminished to, you know, a pale shadow of its former self, and a lot of other gun dealers have simply gone out of business. So they've been successful in that. But I want you to explain to my audience why it is that they're hearing this gun regulation is what it's been portrayed as, Measure 114, that says if you want to buy a gun, you have to get a permit, and you have to take a class, and then you can go get the permit and buy your gun. They're hearing that, well, this is just regulation, but you and I both agree this is, in fact, a de facto ban, because after this thing is declared constitutional by the state Supreme Court, if it is, nobody's going to be able to buy a gun in the state of Oregon.
Well, as one of the attorneys in our court case said, you can't ask people to jump through hoops and then not provide any hoops for them to jump through. And that's exactly what will happen. They've created a series of barriers that are going to be virtually impossible to comply with, certainly be totally impossible if you're not very, very, you know, if you're not affluent. So this will, you know, it sounds like a cliche, but this is going to impact the people who have the fewest resources the most. And of course, by banning magazines, they will completely outlaw the vast majority of lawfully owned shotguns too. So people have really don't know how far reaching this is, but the hoops that you would have to go through to simply get a permit, which will give you permission to ask for permission again to try to buy a gun, is going to, the barriers are so high, so expensive, and the classes that are being required really don't exist at this point.
Well, and in fact, is there any reason to believe that they will exist? Meaning, if you want to get a permit under Measure 114, if found constitutional, you would go and get a class that is either given by law enforcement or one that law enforcement has endorsed as worthy. And then you take that class, you pass the class, then you go get the permit from the law enforcement agency, either the sheriff's office or the police department. That sounds fairly straightforward, except is anybody offering the class right now? And does the law actually require that law enforcement provide the class?
No, I believe that people will make the class available. I believe that there will be instructors who will get permission from friendly law enforcement to give the class. I think it's going to be very complicated because what's going to be required in the class is so vague. For example, I've been a certified firearm instructor for over 40 years, but I'm not a certified suicide instructor. And if that's required and you have to teach federal law, which is constantly changing and most instructors don't know anything about, if somebody starts teaching the class, how do we assure that that class will be accepted later on, that there won't be all kinds of challenges? And, of course, it will require a live fire, which greatly reduces the number of facilities that are available to do that. So I think the classes will exist, but I think they'll be challenged. I think they'll be expensive. I think they'll be hard to find. And I think that if you're not a rich person living in a place where you can spend a lot of money and travel to get this class, you are going to be screwed. And that has always been the intention, and that is what is going to happen.
You know, the other thing that hasn't been talked about a lot, but I want you to address it, is that in both Washington State, where I live, and the state of Oregon, you're not only not allowed to buy these, buy the magazines or the guns that have those magazines in them at 10 plus. I own a number of guns that would be illegal for me to buy today, but I own them and I'm already grandfathered in. But if you decide to move, let's say you move from Oregon to Washington, Washington to Oregon, are you allowed to take those plus 10 magazines from one state to the other, or even move out of the state, say, following a profession or a move of a child or whatever, and then come back to the state of Oregon? Will you be allowed to do that, or will you be breaking the law when you do it?
I'm quite sure that in Washington, you will be prohibited from doing that. In Oregon, they say you're allowed to keep the magazines that you own, but they've created a system that's impossible to comply with. So magazines are de facto banned unless you can prove you got them prior to when the ban goes into effect. But as you and I both know, that cannot be done. And even lawyers and sheriffs are getting this wrong, saying, well, just show your receipt. Well, a receipt does not demonstrate that what's on the receipt is the magazine that's in your possession, because they're all the same and there's no serial numbers. So they've created an environment that is impossible to comply with so that they can selectively arrest and harass whoever they want to.
Yeah, because this means that, say, the police encounter somebody and they say, it appears you have some 30-round magazines, and you say, yeah, I bought them before they were banned. The police could say, we're going to cite you anyway, and you will have an affirmative defense when you arrive at court with a lawyer that's going to cost you a few $1,000s, and then you're going to have to prove, because it's your burden to prove, that you actually bought the magazines before then. Even if you have the receipts, the receipt that you have that says you bought 3 magazines does not prove that the 3 magazines the cop caught you with are actually the magazines you bought. There's no way to do that, is there?
Correct. And I've even seen people say, take a digital picture of your magazines with a timestamp website. I have the exact same photo that I took 3 times of a box of magazines that I applied 3 different timestamps to, one which is 20 years in the future. So that's not going to be acceptable either. It's a joke. It's an entrapment machine, and I think people should be prepared for it coming.
Okay, and when it does, is this going to wipe out basically every FFL licensed dealer in the state?
I think the big box stores will be able to survive because they sell other stuff. But I don't know how the person who, remember, once you get your permit, all that does is allow you to apply to buy a gun, where the state police can do what they've been doing regularly now, which is delay and deny people forever, frequently in complete violation of the law.
Okay, and if people bought during this 3-year period from the time of the passage of 114 to current, and then the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, will those purchases be valid or not? You know?
No, the law that they passed in the last session changed the implementation date. A lot of people think that it actually implemented 114 in spite of what the court does. But what it does is it changes the implementation date so that it's not retroactive. But the problem, of course, is once again, you cannot prove when you bought these things. And remember one thing, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you're out of luck. But if you're a criminal hood rat, a quick trip to Idaho, you can buy all you want, no questions asked.
No doubt. Hey, that is Kevin Stair from the Oregon Firearms Federation. Kevin, thank you very much.
Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm getting a raft of emails from people about this gun case that is coming before the Oregon Supreme Court next week. And let me make it clear, this is an Oregon Supreme Court case. It is not a federal case. There are a couple of other federal cases involving Measure 114. I don't know how long that thing is going to be tied up, but even if the state of Oregon and its Supreme Court, with every single justice appointed by either Kate Brown, former governor of Oregon, or by Tina Kotek, the current governor of Oregon, I can't remember what the split is there, but the entire court is appointed by Democrat governors. So what does that tell you about where things are going to go? This segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our poll on X today: should Trump or the Democrats be blamed for millions losing their SNAP benefits this weekend? Well, they're going to go away if the Democrats do not cave in and agree to let the federal government operate. And again, I know I'm kind of expecting that I'm going to get naysayers who say, oh, no, this is also the fault of the Republicans. Do you know, the Republicans actually did this very, very well. They said, let's have a continuing resolution. That's basically a status quo budget that is the same budget we've been under since Joe Biden was president of the United States, believe it or not. And they said, we're not going to add anything. So there are plenty of things that I'm sure Republican members of the House or the Senate wanted to add to that bill. They didn't add a single thing. There are also places where real conservative Republicans would have cut back on federal spending. They didn't cut back on anything. They simply said this is a clean bill that continues government funding at its current level. What did the Democrats do? They turned around and said, we want $1.4 trillion, trillion with a T, $1.4 trillion in new spending, and that includes benefits for illegal aliens on Medicaid. It includes benefits for people on Obamacare with the expansion of Obamacare that was done during the pandemic. In other words, that emergency is long over. They don't need it any longer, and yet that's what they're going to do. So should Trump or the Democrats, one or the other, be blamed for millions losing their SNAP benefits this weekend? And I pointed out to you that the Center for Immigration Statistics says that about 59%, more than half, of all the people on SNAP in America are not Americans. They're not citizens. They're not green card holders. They are, for the most part, foreign nationals who are in our country, many of them as refugees or other, you know, forms of entering the country. And most of that is a scam, because if you understand that during the Joe Biden administration, they tried everything, they threw everything in the kitchen sink of that problem and said, let's find ways to legitimize the status of all these people. So they called them refugees. They called them asylum seekers. There are what are called U visas that are given out to people who claim that they were the victim of a crime. There was lots of cheating in that as well. There were literally illegal aliens who had fake being the victim of a crime, using other illegal aliens to pretend to commit a crime against them so they could then qualify and say, I'm a crime victim, you have to let me stay. But the fact that more than half the people on SNAP are in fact not Americans and not legal residents of the United States, that should tell you a lot. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, this is the most perfect split decision that I've seen in a long, long time from our X poll. Would you support Donald Trump running for a third term? Now, we've discussed the fact that legally and constitutionally, he is not entitled to run for a third term. But reporters keep asking him about it. And I think Donald Trump has fun teasing them along, saying, I'd love to do it. He knows he can't do it, and yet it's fun to tease the media because none of them seem to have a copy of a constitution that they can actually read. But when asked, would you support Donald Trump running for a third term, a majority, 51% of you said no, and 49% of you said yes, and that is the bottom line on that. Now, a couple of the emails that I got in the last couple of minutes. Paul writes in, Lars, I'm a NRA-certified firearms instructor, which right now seems to be the only instructors who can teach the course proposed by Measure 114. I spoke with my friend Ralph, who's a level one instructor with the NRA. He and I teach the current concealed weapons class. He has no idea of what the expectations are for the 114 course, and that's assuming the Oregon Supreme Court says that the law itself is constitutional. The CCL is a three-hour course which mainly covers safety and the law. The Oregon 114 class is a two-part class. Looks like it'll take around 8 hours. But we do not know what the expectations of the class are yet. It also requires a live fire class, which also does not provide what the testing is. In other words, you're supposed to go to the range and fire a gun, but it doesn't say, do you have to hit, three inside the 10 ring out of five? I mean, it doesn't explain it. My guess is they'll use the NRA certified pistol or NRA certified rifle, which is 50% of the people in America can't pass. It is a hard test. As I hear more on the testing, I will let you know. Paul, I would appreciate it. because I think what Oregon has done is effectively said to every citizen in the state who's not in the military or not in law enforcement, you can't buy a gun. And I see a Second Amendment federal constitutional right being violated there. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I hate it when politicians lie to the public. I hate it when they lie to me, too, but I especially hate it when politicians lie to their constituents. And I think you're being lied to right now by the mayor of Portland. I would say that the governor is lying as well, except the governor is off on a very expensive junket with her wife in Asia. I don't know exactly when Tina Kotek is planning to return, but you can't really tell whether she's here or gone because nothing actually gets done at the governor's level. But at the mayor's level, there was a decision made to clear out the Antifa encampment that has been laying siege to the ICE headquarters in Southwest Portland for the better part of 4 months. And I thought I'd find out the straight skinny from David Medina, who I hope if he doesn't find this too proprietary, we consider our guy on the ground in the So What district of Portland, the South Waterfront. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. And yes, you know, you can consider me anything for you, Lars. I mean, I'm happy to come on the show, happy to work with you. You've been great. So thank you.
Well, I've been happy to recommend people take a look at your social media coverage of this, because an awful lot of what they see on your social media coverage is what they're not seeing from the cartel legacy media that seems to constantly go down there. I mean, they had good practice during the pandemic and the George Floyd riots, standing in front of burning buildings and declaring a mostly peaceful protest. They just reprised that in the 2025 year by just standing in front of the ICE headquarters saying it's mostly right. Peaceful, except the lasers and the eyes and the exploding fireworks and all that. Mostly peaceful, other than the broken windows and people being put in fear of their lives. That's ICE officers and people like that. But I want your appraisal, because my consideration is that this last weekend's cleanup was the equivalent of the 16-year-old kid who's been ignoring mom all week while dad's out of town. And mom keeps saying, clean up your room. And the 16-year-old, I would imagine boy more than girl, is saying, yeah, mom, I'll get to it. And then when mom says, dad's going to be home in an hour, all of a sudden the 16-year-old goes into hyperspeed and starts cleaning things up, knowing that when dad shows up, that room better be clean. Dad in this case would be Donald Trump, and mom in this case would be wimpy Mayor Wilson. Am I seeing this the wrong way?
You know what's funny? I actually gave this very similar example I was at a private dinner with some family, and I gave the same example. I was like, it's like the kids are, you know, they're walking all over mom, and then all of a sudden dad comes home and gets out the belt, you know, dad being Donald Trump. And so, I mean, that's exactly what's going on here. It's just, you know, Lars, you mentioned the media here. Gosh, can you imagine how great Oregon could be if the media did its job and held these Democrat politicians accountable? But that's not the case here. They're in bed with them. They cover for them. You know, K2 did this 24-hour stream to report, and they knew exactly what they were doing. 24-hour stream to report on the ICE facility. It was funny, the activity was actually, we had video of this. It was low, and then as soon as K2 entered their stream, the next night, the chaos erupted, and we reported on that. But I will tell you this, with the cleanups, what I'm seeing with the cleanup the other day, so I had a Portland police officer reach out to me, and cleanup of that camp, you know, every so often, you know, usually like once a week or something, or once every couple weeks. But this one, I will say this one that happened over the weekend was not that. I mean, that was not a scheduled thing. That was not a business as usual. So yes, I believe, I think your thesis is correct, Lars. I think that there are, you know, the federal judge is ruling today. We haven't got the ruling yet, but they are ruling today. The circuit court here in Oregon is ruling if Donald Trump can send troops or not. So, yes, this all looks calculated, and I think you're exactly right.
Well, and in the case of Karen Immergut, who is the federal judge who somehow found it in the laws and the Constitution that the president of the United States had no authority to call up the National Guard, despite its name, National Guard, and that he had no authority to send the National Guard to an American city, even though we've got at least three other prominent presidents, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson, who all sent the military to American cities to deal with problems that the locals would not deal with. Karen Immergut somehow found in the law books an excuse to say, no, Trump doesn't have that authority. Right. And then the crazy Ninth Circuit Court overruled her. And now her decision is, do I stand up and say the Ninth Circuit Court, which is considerably above her low-level federal judge position, they don't know what they're talking about, and I'm just going to spit in their face? My bet is she won't do that.
Absolutely. And what, you know, what we're seeing is a judicial coup. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And it's not extreme to say, it's not fake news to say, you are seeing activist judges across America stand up to the Trump administration, stand up to Trump's policies and what he's trying to do, which is crazy, Lars, because all Trump's trying to do is make America safe again. He's just trying to get the legal criminals and fix our immigration system, close our borders. And we have the Democrats and their fake media puppets constantly butting up against his agenda, which is the American people agenda. We voted for this, Lars. We voted for this man after all the indictments, after all the impeachments. We voted for Donald Trump to take over the disaster that was Joe Biden. And, you know, even more, just breaking a little bit ago, another activist judge here in Oregon ruled against the Trump administration. They said he can't pull federal funding over, sexual education and gender identity education to kids here in Oregon. It is a circus, exactly what you're saying.
Well, think about it this way. The Congress can appropriate money, which they did. They sent it over to the Department of Education. But then it's in a federal department. How Department of Ed spends that money is up to who? The head of the executive branch. You don't have to be a constitutional scholar like Barack Hussein Obama to understand the executive runs the executive branch agencies. And unless Congress said, you will fund transgender education of children, then the Department of Ed spends the money any way they want or any way the executive wants them to spend it. You know, again, they seem to be rolling out these decisions and then double daring the appeals courts not to overrule them. And Trump has a tremendous record around. I think he's 16 wins out of 19 cases before the Supreme Court and a similar number in the appeals courts. So these federal judges know that we're just going to do this for show. And we know we'll get overturned because there's no consequence for them in being overturned. Right.
It's exactly right. And I think we just got to keep pushing, Lars. And, you know, I will say this, what I saw over the weekend, you know, we've been going through a lot here in Oregon. You know this, Lars. You've been doing this a lot longer than me. And you've been seeing the trajectory of Oregon, the decline of it. It was nice to see a win. It was nice to see Portland police officers being able to enforce the law, threatening Antifa with arrests. Whether it's a show or not, it was good to see. And it's, you know, we got to keep fighting for in Oregon. You know, we don't know who's going to be the nominee for governor. I know Christine Drazen just announced, and we have Daniel Bessel in there as well. But, you know, I think we all just need to fight in the same direction. I tell everybody, I know what, if you're MAGA or moderate or whatever, we have to fight in the same direction to get this state out of the hands of these crazy nut jobs.
You can check out David Medina on social media. And by the way, David, I already saw Dwayne Yunker, member of the legislature, pointing out that there are now people running against Drazen. You know, even though she's not the nominee, she's one of the two people running for the nomination for governor, saying Christine Drazen equals Donald Trump. And I thought, look, all due respect to Ms. Drazen, Senator Drazen now, she is not Donald Trump. And nobody on the conservative side thinks she is. So when they try to run it that way, I don't think they're going to be successful in trying to convince Oregonians why Christine Drazen, she's just the female embodiment of Donald Trump. That is David Medina. You'll find his work on social media. Coming up in a moment, I'll get you your phone calls and emails. And the Democrats shut the government down to stuff the spending package with LGBTQ foreign aid, yet they attacked Donald Trump for pursuing an investment deal with Argentina. We'll get to that next. With
just think of him as your concealed carry.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to talk about two things. One, there has been a deal cut to get some aid to Argentina, except at this point, it's not necessarily direct aid from the United States. I mean, usually, if you hear about Ukraine, you know we're going to be writing checks for tens or hundreds of billions of dollars. But in the case of Ukraine, they say this is a mixture of aid that is going to be private banks and what they call sovereign wealth funds. They're going to provide some money for Argentina. And I'll give you some of the numbers behind that. But let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put naysayers right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Our poll on X today, or the X poll, whichever you prefer to call it, should Donald Trump or the Democrats be blamed for millions losing their SNAP benefits this coming weekend? Now, I've had some people suggest, well, it's not going to happen. No, I think it is going to happen. At this point, there is no sign that the Democrats are going to give this up. But two things to consider. Number one, the Democrats control entirely the decision about whether or not the federal government gets back into operation or not. It has been shut down now for 28 days. It is the second longest shutdown in American history, bar none. The longest was about a week longer, 35 days, which we'll be coming up on in about 1 week. That's one thing to consider. So if you want to know who could end the shutdown, Republicans proposed a funding package for the government that included no Republican wish list. It included no Republican or conservative cuts, and it passed the House of Representatives. When did that happen? July. Freaking July. And now we've got the Democrats who a month ago, and they have now voted 13 different times not to pass that funding package through the United States Senate. It got a vote of 53 to 43. And if you're wondering, how does 53 to 43 not pass the bill? Because they need 60 votes to be able to pass this bill. Who could provide the extra votes to get from 53 to 60? That would be the Democrats. Do the Republicans have seven extra votes? No. Do the Democrats have seven extra votes? Yes. It is entirely within the control of the Democrat Party. And at least early on, people like Senator Chuck Schumer kept telling reporters, well, this is great. This is working out really well for the Democrats because they want to convince Americans this is all Donald Trump's fault. Only they're the only ones who could actually pass this funding package. That's one consideration. Then the second consideration, if you live in America and you have a local newspaper, news organization, I guarantee that in the next couple of days, if you haven't seen them already, there are going to be tons and tons of sob stories. This mom or this dad is losing SNAP benefits just as this child is about to celebrate a birthday or this or that or the other thing. Fact is that an awful lot of the people on SNAP are not American citizens. And the numbers come from the Center for Immigration Statistics. They were cited by Derek Evans over at Newsmax. Well, in any case, Derek pointed out that about 59% of the people on SNAP benefits right now are not, in fact, Americans. They are foreign nationals. They are illegal aliens. They are people here on various different statuses. Some of the millions of people who are allowed into the United States by Joe Biden over the last 4 years leading up to the beginning of Donald Trump's administration. Now, let me go to a couple of other issues, and one of them has to do with the crazy stuff, the crazy funding that Democrats were trying to get to be able to get this bill passed. They said, we want to have $1.5 trillion in new spending. They wanted to fund not only illegal alien health care in Medicaid, but they wanted to fund some other crazy things as well. Speaker Mike Johnson talked about that today.
The Democrats right now fear the far left activists more than they fear air traffic controllers, border patrol agents, American service members, and so many others missing their paychecks. They fear the Marxist insurgents like Mamdani more than they fear families and children going hungry from lapsed benefits that keep food on their tables.
Yeah, and not only that, but Johnson also said it a long list of some of the absolute insane items that are included in the Democrats' wish list. And the Democrats have said, if we don't get our wish list, we are not voting to start the federal government funding again. Listen to that.
Things like $4 million for global LGBTQI plus awareness campaigns around the world. $4 million for the LGBTQI plus democracy grants in the Balkans. They want $2 million for feminist democratic principles projects in Africa. We're not doing that.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Now, let me take you back to Argentina. Consider this, that Javier Milei, the new president of that country, came into an absolutely terrible situation because Argentina was in a very, very tough spot. They actually had negative economic growth rather than positive growth. They had poverty at 42%, and inflation was running along at more than 200%. Now, has he made Argentina financially whole yet? No, but he's increased growth from minus 1.6% nationwide to 5%. He's cut poverty from 42 to 32. He's cut inflation from more than 200% a year to about 34%. And now the Treasury Secretary says that the Trump administration is working on $20 billion in aid to Argentina. Now, in our federal budget, $20 billion is like a rounding error. But it's not taxpayer money. It is money put up by private banks and sovereign wealth funds. And so in that case, does it make sense to say, if we're now seeing Argentina being brought back to fiscal sanity the way the United States should be, that its inflation rate is now running at less than one quarter of what it was running at, that poverty has been cut down and growth is now taking off, does it make sense to actually do that? I'm going to get some of your calls. Let me start with Keith. Hey, Keith, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to your thing about President Trump sending troops to American cities. Back in 1968, when I was in the U.S. Army, President Johnson sent troops to Chicago during the Democrat convention. And then when Martin Luther King got shot, he sent troops to Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And, you know, I think there was approximately 2,000 troops, active troops, sent to both cities.
Yep, and that is true. But, Keith, can I give you three better examples? Because in this case, you've got Trump saying, I'm going to send troops to cities that don't want them, that have already said, President Trump, don't send them. Does it make sense for a president to send them where the city or the state has said, we don't want them? Well, let me give you three examples where presidents have done it. And I would double dare any Democrat liberal to say it was a bad idea. President Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne to Little Rock, Arkansas, over the objections of Little Rock, over the objections of the Arkansas governor, who said, we don't want the troops there. And why did he send them there? To make sure little kids who were black and brown could go to school with white kids. In the case of Kennedy and Johnson, Kennedy sent troops to Mississippi to make sure that James Meredith could go to the college there, even though Mississippi, I think it was Mississippi State, has said we're not letting Meredith in. And Alabama, same kind of situation with Johnson. Those were so similar to today's circumstances, where you've got a president who says, I'm sending troops. You've got a city or a state saying, we don't want them. And the president sent them anyway. And all three of those presidents are actually lauded today for having done that. I believe Donald Trump will be lauded as well. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This one is so bizarre, I just almost can't wrap my head around it. If unaccompanied children crossing America's southern border, not today under Trump, that border is locked down tight. But back during Joe Biden, the biggest friend to human traffickers in the world, if they were impregnated by coyotes, to put it politely, should the taxpayers pay for their abortion travel? I thought I'd put that question to Sean Carney, who joins me now. Sean is the president and CEO of 40 Days for Life. Sean, God bless you, and thanks so much for the work that 40 Days for Life does. But what should we make of this? The Trump administration moving to roll back a regulation that allowed taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions for illegal alien children in the United States to get abortions?
Yes, you did a great job, actually, of summarizing the bizarre and crazy law that Biden had. This was in an era after they overturned Roe where the federal government, because abortion went back to the states, they just married abortion, and Biden did everything he could. You remember they started with letting veterans in the armed forces, they'd pay for their travel to have abortions. He defunded all the FDA regulations or deregulated the abortion pills and restrictions on those. He increased the mail order abortions. He just started doing the bizarre. This was probably number one on my list personally of just the bizarre. It's also, when it happened, I did a couple of interviews, and it's a little shady on the racist front. You know, you're here, you're pregnant. The first thing we need to do for you as the United States of America is to abort your kid. But you're more than welcome to stay here after that. It was just very, very bizarre, and I'm glad that they undid it.
Well, it is. It's crazy because in this case, does the Hyde Amendment mean anything? Or does the Hyde Amendment, if you look at it hyper-technically, the way a Democrat lawyer would, you say, well, that only constrains what Congress is allowed to fund, but it doesn't constrain a president like Biden from saying, we're going to use taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions, even though the Hyde Amendment says you can't have laws that fund abortions from taxpayer dollars. But the administration is allowed to do it anyway, as long as they do it outside of the law. I mean, I don't even understand how they can get away with that.
That's their lame excuse. Well, Congress can't fund the abortion, but Biden can. Sometimes they would declare an area, they do this during hurricanes, as a natural disaster, a national emergency. They use national emergencies to justify it. So who knows what Biden used. But that is the justification. And of course, it's a violation of the Hyde Amendment. Anything to pay for abortion. This was, and actually the left is getting away from this. The abortion solves all problems. Cancer, the environment, a hurricane comes, your kid has, you know, Down syndrome, whatever it is. Abortion will solve your problems. Inflation. We see, you know, just recently the Democrats saying, you know, when you have less kids to feed, your grocery bill is cheaper, which is true. So if you kill all your kids, your grocery bill will for sure go down. That's a mathematical fact.
I've heard that argument made by people with a straight face. It's amazing that they can actually say that with a straight face.
Well, what it is abortion at its root is eugenics. So if you have a group of people you don't want more of, whether they're poor or black or brown or disabled or struggling with inflation or
Down syndrome awareness month, you know, it's like, let's just kill them all. Yeah, no problem. Problem solved, right? Just like Iceland has done.
Just like Iceland has done when they claim to have cured it. And it is. It's a great it highlights the eugenics part of abortion, which is the only reason to support abortion. It's a sick and demented reason, but it's the most honest one when you look at the history of Planned Parenthood or the rhetoric that you see from passionate abortion supporters. They don't want poor people and they don't want minorities. And if you sneak across the border, you know, we'll pay for you to travel to have an abortion. So it is one of those laws, though, that I don't think most people knew about until Trump overturned it.
Well, and in fact, was it even a law? It was a federal regulation. So this was not passed with Democrat votes or Republican votes. This was just put in place by a bunch of faceless bureaucrats.
Yeah. That's exactly, you know, what happened. And Biden, unfortunately, effectively used COVID to justify a lot of this. That's where we get a lot. That's when we created this mail order abortion pills nonsense, was during COVID. And he certainly used the crisis at the border to promote abortion. And, you know, look, this is why Trump got elected, because of the border. People who didn't care about the border started caring. It was a complete disaster. Kamala had no answer for it. She said she would have done nothing different. And that's what got Trump elected. And you look at, you know, what he has done on the border. It's been fantastic. And they have tried to, you know, take all the angles that were inhumane and we're lynching people on the border and all this crap. But the reality is he has made America safer by just being the adult in the room when it comes to the border, you know, and not offering to pay for people's abortions, but actually, you know, enforcing the laws that we have on the books. So These stupid kind of laws are why Kamala lost.
By the way, I'm talking to Sean Carney from 40 Days for Life, the CEO, and let's talk about the ugly truth of this. There were coyotes. The coyotes were certainly not blameless, but there were coyotes who literally told the women traveling in these groups that they trafficked up to the border and then got across the border. They said, by the way, on the way, you're very likely to be raped. And you may be impregnated, so they advise them to take birth control and all the rest of this, including young girls, children. And so Joe Biden made all that happen, allowed it to happen, because he created the marketplace. There's no marketplace now. Coyotes, for the most part, can't get you across the border. But when they could and when they could do it easily, they would tell these women and their daughters, you're going to be raped on the way. It's a very good chance, 1 in 3 or 2 in 3. It was a very high likelihood. You're going to be raped. You may get pregnant. And then Joe Biden was saying, oh, but if you're pregnant and a child, we'll have the taxpayers pay for your abortion. So it was okay in Joe Biden's mind to facilitate people coming across the border illegally, but not okay to facilitate the birth of a child who did nothing wrong.
You're exactly right, and it's shameful, and we've seen it firsthand because we have 40 Days for Life campaigns along the southern border, and that's exactly what they do. They just haul them in, and it's absolutely shameful just for you and I as Americans that this is the first experience, no matter what people's view on immigration is, this is their first experience in America is, hey, you were raped and you need an abortion, and this is how we do things. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's why I'm just tired of this misguided mercy garbage of people saying that he's some kind of, you know, ICE is some kind of monster because they're enforcing our laws. The laws are humane and people don't want to acknowledge that.
Well, and the thing that the Democrats have never either tried or successfully managed to overturn the Hyde Amendment, thank God. But the Hyde Amendment mm-hmm. says you're not going to have any federal funding for abortions. And even when Democrats were in the majority, they didn't say, hey, let's get rid of this. It's inconvenient. It's still on the books. And then Joe Biden just said, well, I'm not constrained by it, so I'm going to go ahead and violate the spirit of the law, even if I'm not violating the letter of the law, right?
Yeah, and I think the great irony of this, because this is what they do when it comes to the border, it didn't get him one Latino vote.
No. If anything, he lost an awful lot of Latino voters to Donald Trump. That is Sean Carney. Sean, thanks so much for the time. So should taxpayer dollars fund abortion travel for unaccompanied alien children? Well, it was during the Biden administration. The Donald Trump administration is rolling back that regulation, never put to a vote in Congress, never authorized by your representatives, because your Democrat Party representatives, they wouldn't want to put their name on something as ugly as this. They just let Joe Biden or President Otto Penn get away with it. Sounds like Joe wasn't calling the shots anyway. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, endeavoring on a daily basis to serve the Pacific Northwest states like Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. In a moment, I want to tell you about how the University of Washington, UW, just canceled a job posting after its DEI loyalty test was exposed by a professor. Is higher ed still about merit or just proving your political allegiance? We'll get to that in just a moment. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com will get you the details. Our poll on X today, should Trump or the Democrats be blamed for millions of Americans losing their SNAP benefits this weekend? Although now we find out the majority of people on SNAP are not actually Americans after all. Now, on that note, let me jump to your calls. Let's start with Gordon. Hey, Gordon, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Larson.
I think you're cherry picking this study, and it's, with full disclosure, I've been on EBT, and I think it's going to cause a riot. And I think you kind of know it's not going to happen, but you're saying it could happen.
I kind of know what's going to happen, not going to happen.
Well, I think it's the last, of course, it's the last minute bargaining chip.
No, hold on, Gordon. What is it that's not going to happen? If you're going to say something is not going to happen, what is it that's not going to happen?
The shutting of EBT.
But look, Gordon, the federal government has been defunded by the Congress because the Democrats voted no on, and they've now voted no 13 times since the 1st of October, the last 28 days. The funding is not there, and Saturday morning, when the SNAP benefits are supposed to issue for the month of November, there is no money in the coffers. So if you think it's not going to happen, where is the money for the EBT going to come from?
Well, okay, I'll answer the question. Okay, that's rare, but if you have a supporter of millions, but my main point, it's not coming from nowhere. My main point otherwise would be is...
No, where is the EBT money going to come from? If you believe it, that I'm just lying and leading people astray, where's the money going to come from?
Nowhere, and people are going to be running the streets eating a sandwich.
Well, then why did you say it's not going to happen? What is it that's not going to happen if it's not the end of EBT benefits Saturday morning?
The shutoff is not going to happen. My bad.
Well, hold on. It was shut off 28 days ago, Gordon. You think that at midnight on Friday night or tomorrow night or tonight that the Democrats are going to suddenly come to their senses and fund the government before SNAP benefits are supposed to issue on Saturday morning?
Yes, because EBT is playing with people's food.
Let me ask you something, Gordon. I'm curious. You've been on EBT for how long?
Quite a bit, actually. I'm getting off it right now.
What was quite a bit? How many years is quite a bit?
Let's say five.
5 years.
Five plus.
Now, do you have a college degree, Gordon? You gave my producer to understand you have a college degree. Do you have one?
Yes, I do, sir.
What is your degree in that puts you on food stamps so everybody can avoid that degree? What is your degree in?
It was way back, sociology.
You got a degree in sociology. What did you plan to do with that as your day job?
I was either going to go to law school or go to master's in sociology.
And you didn't do either one of those. So what are you going to do with a degree in sociology that is so crappy that you can't earn enough money to feed yourself?
I drove a taxi and I did warehouse. And I
did your sociology degree help you with the taxi driving?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Okay. What job do you work today, if any?
I work in a retail outlet.
You're a clerk in a retail outlet?
Basically, yes.
Okay, you work full time?
No, sir.
Why not? Are you not very good at running a cash register?
Well, standing issues, some health issues, different things.
I see plenty of clerks that sit down on a stool and do their job. I'm willing to bet you're in help as.
No, you're right.
Lazy or what?
No, I got a small attention deficit.
And yet part of the day you're running a cash register. That's got to be exciting for your boss.
I don't run a cash register. I couldn't do that. It's too fast for me.
So what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Just normal help out stuff.
Help out stuff.
A lot of people in stores.
Somebody pays you minimum wage to do what?
They have janitors. They have cleanup people.
So are you a janitor?
I don't want to get too detailed, dude.
Why not? Are you afraid somebody might turn you into the IRS or what?
I guess I am. But no, I'm not. I'm not. I do just the kind of help out stuff, like clerk stuff,
But you can't find a full-time job doing help out stuff.
I don't know about that. They'd have to give me a bench for sure. I got neuropathy in my feet and all that junk.
Okay. Gordon, thank you very much. By the way, just to sum it up, A math professor at the University of Washington says that because of DEI, the University of Washington is now demanding a DEI loyalty test in which you're asked, what have you done specifically to help out black students? And if you're not willing to go with the loyalty statement, then you don't get the job. University of Washington, you ought to be ashamed of your collective selves. It is the Lars Larson Show, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. It's funny to me, as a reporter for a long, long time, that there are certain places in America that become ground zero for certain kinds of things. For example, if you're talking about transgender bathroom issues, while they're present in virtually every community in America, Loudoun County, Virginia has become ground zero for that issue. And I'm sure you could name other cities that have become ground zero for certain kinds of things. But when it comes to protests, whether it was Occupy, whether it was BLM, whether it's Antifa, it's anti-ICE, it's anti-cop, I would have to say that the hands-down champion when it comes to being ground zero for that has got to be Portland, which is the home of our central broadcast studios for the Lars Larson Show. So when I saw this story in the Daily Caller by Hudson Crozier, the fact that a number of the protesters, as so many of us have suspected for so long, are, I guess you'd call them frequent flyers. They go, they protest, they get arrested, they're up on charges, and then they're back out to do it again and again and again. And apparently law enforcement does not see that pattern, or if it does see the pattern, it doesn't actually act to correct that problem. Hudson Crozier joins me now, who writes with the Daily Caller News Foundation. Hudson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Larson. How are you?
Tell me about, I'm doing great. Other than this, tell me about these 11 people who keep getting arrested over and over again, with the definition of insanity being doing the same thing over and over again. And I mean, in this case, the police and the judicial system say, we keep arresting these people. It doesn't seem to change their behavior. They just go out and do it again.
Right. So there have been about 60 people arrested at the anti-ICE protests in Portland this year. And I dug through a whole bunch of records to figure out that 11 people arrested at left-wing protests this year in Portland already had a prior arrest of some kind. Most of them arrests at other protests before, such as BLM in 2020 or other things. 10 out of those 11 this year were arrested at near the ICE facility, specifically the one exception being somebody who was arrested at a protest against Riley Gaines at Portland State University back in May. And to continue what you were saying, all of these people, all 11, have ended up back on the streets in some form or fashion. Most of them have just been released pretrial. A couple have taken plea deals, and two had their current cases dropped.
So, Hudson, if generically the idea of law enforcement is when somebody does something illegal, you have some kind of consequence, some kind of sanction, with the idea that you'll keep them from doing it again. Apparently, in this case, it's not working.
Well, some in the Portland Police Bureau are no doubt frustrated at that. In fact, the on-the-record response I got from the Portland Police spokesperson deflected to say that, and I mean, it's a fair point, deflected to say that we're not really responsible for prosecutorial decisions or judicial decisions. We just arrest people and gather the best evidence that we can to support good cases.
Okay, and then it comes down to maybe the prosecutor or the district attorney, because you point out that between May and October, 7 of the repeat arrestees were cut loose without bail in their cases. 4 signed plea agreements or had their charges dropped altogether. So it sounds like Once the police arrest them, they just get processed through the system and then effectively without sanction cut loose to go back and do it again.
Well, since 2020 and perhaps before, the surrounding county of Multnomah County has totally been on this decarceral mindset that took the nation by storm since BLM. And so that's a combination of what prosecutors do and sometimes what judges do. In this one extreme case of this lady named Tracy Molina, she has more than a dozen cases against her, some closed now, but just has the mile-long rap sheet. And in her current federal case related to an ICE protest this year, an Obama-appointed federal judge released her pretrial. Then she was arrested after August for allegedly violating the pretrial release in some way. And then another Obama-appointed judge ordered her release pretrial again in the same case that day that she was arrested. So it's just going to be very hard, for whatever reason, in a protest-related case, for someone to actually be held in jail.
I'm talking to Hudson Crozier from the Daily Caller News Foundation. So in that case, what she accused of, is this the case involving an assault?
That current federal one that I just mentioned was a failure to obey a lawful order. So allegedly she showed up to the protest and was just acting disruptively and disobeyed police directives. But her other more than a dozen charges through the years have included assaulting a law enforcement officer, interfering with a law enforcement officer, disorderly conduct, criminal mischief, trespassing, resisting arrest, reckless endangerment, unlawful graffiti, so on and so forth. She was convicted of only disorderly conduct in the local cases in 2019, and then three of them are still ongoing, and then all the rest at the local level were dropped.
You know, Hudson, the thing I always wonder about with these people, what's their day job? Who pays their bills? How do they manage to support themselves? Because an awful lot of us suspect that all of this, a lot of this activity by the most active participants is probably supported by folks on the outside. Did you find any evidence of that in the 11 you looked at?
Well, the FBI definitely, under Trump, wants to find out who is funding political violence and any possible connection to money that these events have. I spoke to one Portland police officer anonymously, and I can't reveal anything about that officer, but that person said that police have observed protesters setting up kind of an encampment type thing near the Portland ICE facility on a regular basis and bringing in a van with a bunch of supplies like bats and sticks and helmets and other questionable things like that. So in some cases, we do see evidence of coordination and support from a group, that's for sure.
Well, and in fact, I've seen that, and this last weekend, they cleared out an awful lot of the encampment that was right around the ICE headquarters, but we've also seen reports that there are rented storage units where they stage a lot of the supplies, so the rioters or potential rioters have all these supplies close at hand and at their ready disposal.
That's definitely something I'd want to look into more in the future. But believe me, just for this story, I think I was very busy just finding all the insane number of crimes that these people have been charged with in the past before their current arrests.
Anything else in particular that we can say that we know about these people other than these most recent arrests they've had?
All of them this year, their current arrest has to do with a leftist protest in some sense. Like I said, almost all of them ICE-related or the Portland State University one. I will say conservatives who are tired of this stuff might have some reason for optimism from Multnomah County DA Nathan Vasquez because he's not a Republican anymore. He's an independent now, but he's at least made some stated commitment to crack down on political violence, whether it comes from Antifa or anyone else.
Sounds like a good idea to me. You can read the full report from Hudson Crozier at the Daily Caller News. Hudson, thanks very much. Back in a moment, you got the Lars Larson Show.
AVMA.org.
We'll be right back.
If we keep meeting like this, people are going to talk. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I know that the Democrats and most of the legacy media have been trying to sell you on the idea that the Trump tax bill only helps rich Americans. Now, they've been making that argument going back to 2017 when the Trump tax cuts were first passed by the United States Congress, by the representatives of the people. And they said, oh, it's only helping the rich people. Actually, in percentage terms, it gave more tax relief to people making $50,000 to $70,000 a year. In percentage terms, they got a bigger cut than all the Jeff Bezos and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates folks out there who also got a cut. Much smaller percentage cut, but they make a much bigger paycheck. Well, I want to give you about 14 different reasons that this bill is actually benefiting not so much the rich, but the tens of millions of Americans who make average wages in this country. And I'm going to be very specific about what the bill does. But first, I want to welcome your phone calls. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list. And our poll on X today: should Donald Trump or the Democrats be blamed for millions of people in America losing SNAP benefits this weekend? I was saying for millions of Americans, but then it turns out that research by the Center for Immigration Statistics show that the majority of people on SNAP or food stamp benefits are actually foreign nationals. A great percentage of them are actually in this country illegally. So, should Trump or the Democrats get the blame? I would argue the Democrats should get the blame. They could end the government shutdown immediately if they wanted to. They need 7 more votes in the United States Senate to pass the bill to fund the government. The Democrats have chosen not to do that. Republicans have a bipartisan bill that passed the House of Representatives, and it passed way back in July. And they have another bill, or the same bill, that passed the, or did not pass the Senate, but the final vote was 53 to 43, which means you get 7 Democrats come over and vote for that bill, and the U.S. government is back in operation. You can find the poll on X at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me tell you why I want to tell you about what is in the Trump tax bill, because if Kamala Harris had won the presidential election in November, the Harris administration would have allowed the Trump tax cuts to expire this year. They would have expired on December 31st of this year. Because they didn't, taxes for average Americans did not rise by, this would have been the average, $3,000 to $6,000 for average wage earners. I'm not talking about the people in the stratosphere like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and people like that. I'm talking about average earners would have paid $3,000, that's $250 a month, or to $6,000 in increased taxes had the Trump tax cuts gone away. And yet, the polling that has come out in the last few weeks indicates that the point of view of Americans has turned slightly negative. That is, you have fewer people who like the Trump tax cuts than those who dislike the Trump tax cuts. Now, for the life of me, I can't imagine, I can't wrap my head around the idea that anybody would not want a tax cut. Although there are people out there who I think perceive that they don't pay taxes anyway, so why would a tax cut matter to them? And that kind of makes sense. But the fact is, the IRS data shows the share of taxes paid by the rich has risen, not fallen, as a result of the 2017 tax cut. That is, taxes went up on the rich under the Trump tax cuts, went down on the middle class. But let me give you a list of some of the things that were in that tax extension where they took the Trump tax cuts in 2017 that were due to go out of existence on New Year's Eve of this year. They were going to go away. Now, when would you have seen the difference? On January 1 or maybe January 15th, when you got your first paycheck and your withholding went up. They were going to hold more money back from your paycheck to be able to pay those taxes. So here's what the bill actually did. Number one, a $4 trillion increase in taxes over 10 years, $400 billion a year times 10 years. It would cut in half the number of families that pay the death tax. In other words, the tax where they tax you after you've already died. They tax your estate. They take it away from the people you leave behind. It suspends the hated alternative minimum tax, where families would figure out how to balance their expenses and their income. And then they would have to be told, no, you're not paying zero, because if you get down to zero, you're going to pay the AMT. That means you pay, even though the rules would appear to say you pay no taxes. It would implement work requirements for able-bodied Americans who get taxpayer-funded benefits, things like Section 8, Medicaid, welfare, or TANF. All of those things now have work requirements. Those work requirements were wiped out by Joe Biden and his cronies. It would save the average family between $1,500 and $2,000 a year in reduced income taxes. It opens up federal lands and waters to oil, gas, coal, and mineral leasing, meaning you can get America back to actually making things and generating its own energy. It extended the 20% tax reduction for small business, not Tesla, not Microsoft, not Boeing, not Intel, not any of those. 20% tax reduction on small business, because you can understand right now small businesses are under tremendous pressure. Minimum wages have gone up, costs have gone up, energy's gone up. At least you bring the tax burden down. It allows almost 100% immediate expensing for business equipment and software and things like that. So if you're a small business and you say, I really need to replace this old desktop computer, but it's going to be $2,000 to buy a brand new computer and monitor and all that. But then under the old rules, you would have had to wait 3 to 5 years to write off the cost of that expenditure. Under the Trump tax cuts, you could immediately take that expense this year, and that made more sense. It also canceled Joe Biden's illegal student loan bailouts. All of that happened because of the Trump tax cut, and it would end and did end Medicaid for illegals. That's part of what the Democrats want to bring back. Let's go to Terry. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, Tina's Kotex, a recall on her. Why is it that we only get a certain amount of time to get a certain amount of signatures so we can recall her? Why don't we have a year to do that? If we all decided that we want to recall her, why don't we have more time?
Because that's what the law allows. And Terry, I know why they wrote the law that way. They said if you want to recall a public official, you have a given amount of time to gather the signature. What that would measure is there a lot of outrage about that particular public official, in this case, Tina Kotek? If you said you have 4 years, let's say, to gather the signatures, you could literally start gathering the signatures the day the person is elected and then gather them for 4 years. What they're trying to measure is there sufficient public anger at this official that you can gather the signatures within a given period of time? That's why that was written into the law. You could rewrite the law if you can get the legislature to pass it and say we want more time to gather the signatures. But that's the reasoning.
Well, look at Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, how long they've been in there. I mean, they don't need, they've been in there too long and they don't do anything.
I agree they've been in there too long. And when the majority of voters in the state of Oregon agree with you, they will elect somebody other than Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley. In the meantime, you have a limited amount of time to gather signatures for a recall. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. The best investment in talk radio, and it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and as usual on this program, if I have a dog in the fight, I like to confess that up front so that if somebody says, hey, you're affected by this, well, the beneficial ownership information reporting requirement on small business, I have a tiny business, it has 2 employees, and me, I'm not considered an employee. But the BOI, as I'm told, would actually affect me. And I think Congress should give some relief to about 32 million small businesses that are up against this really pointless government mandate. Jeff Brabant joins me now, who's VP at the National Federation of Independent Business. Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me back on.
I'm glad to have you back on. Would you mind do your best, because I've tried to explain this to my audience before, what the BOI reporting requirement actually does?
Sure. So if you're a business with 20 or fewer employees, and this only applies to small businesses, those with 20 or fewer employees, what this regulation would do is say you have to prove to the government who your beneficial owners are. So if you own more than 25% of the company, you have to file your personal contact information, your home address, your business address, a copy of your driver's license with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is the intelligence agency that investigates money laundering and financial crimes. And not only does it require the actual owners, it requires anyone who substantially controls the company, which is really loosely defined by FinCEN, to even mean a general manager of a restaurant who has a 0% ownership stake and is just a salaried employee would have to do it. So any senior staff would have to do it. And the scary thing is, okay, I start a new business, I report my senior staff, what's the big deal? It's a lifetime commitment. And if you forget to update your information within 30 days of anything changing, you can go to jail for 2 years or get fined up to $10,000.
Now,
there's 32 million LLCs this applies to.
Jeff, just so I don't overstate this, that means that one of your senior managers in a small business that has, say, a dozen employees decides to move to a new apartment or buys a house and moves somewhere. If you don't update that information, you can go to jail for up to 2 years?
Yeah, assuming that that's the information you provided to FinCEN, if any of that information changes, you can go to jail.
Well, and the ridiculous assumption built into all this. Now, again, I don't want to overstate it, but I think I understand this right. They're thinking that out there somewhere there are small businesses that are owned by people who are engaged in criminal activity. One of them that comes to mind recently is a woman who was running a small convenience store business, and she was laundering money for the drug cartels. Now, there were clearly people who were involved in running her business because she would apparently take the money in, and then, she would deposit it as business revenues that were coming in allegedly from her various little convenience stores. And then she'd wire the money off to wherever the cartel was located in, you know, somewhere in Central or South America. And that they're going to file the information about these criminals who are involved in telling this woman how to run her business. FinCEN actually believed that the criminals were going to say, yeah, just turn over all our personal information to the government. Yeah, that's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, exactly. You're asking criminals to file paperwork to tell them themselves. That's just not going to happen. The people who are going to honestly file the paperwork are honest, law-abiding, patriotic American small business owners. And let's be honest. If you're in the business of laundering money, which requires you have dirty money that you've acquired through illegal means, you got to go to a bank. You got to figure out someone who can set up these illegal shell companies and you have a certain level of sophistication that you're not just some common criminal. You're a fairly sophisticated criminal to launder millions of dollars. And the idea that a sophisticated criminal is going to say, well, you know, they asked me who owns my company, so I guess I'll just tell them I'm breaking the law, it's ludicrous. And the fact that you're putting this many American small businesses at risk is terrifying for a lot of small business. And Lars, I know this is a really scary thing, but one thing I do want to point out is that earlier this spring, President Trump exempted American small businesses. He looked at this and said, this is a terrible idea. And to use his words from a social media post about this, he called it an absolute disaster for small business and an economic menace when he exempted small businesses. But we're not out of the woods just because the president exempted American small businesses. This passed years and years ago on defense bill. It's called, as part of a statute called the Corporate Transparency Act. And that's still on the books. So a future president, when Donald Trump's not president one day, can come in and put it right back into effect. So what we're doing is saying to Congress, hey, just because President Trump saved us for the next 3-4 years doesn't mean we're permanently out of the woods for 32 million American small businesses. You guys need to act, and you need to repeal this right away.
Now, could they repeal it by attaching a similar repeal to the way it got in to another bill that's going to pass anyway, and then just tell the Democrats, if I assume that the Democrats are going to object to this, say, show me the law enforcement person who says, yep, we think we can get criminals to confess in writing to the federal government that they're involved in a small business. Like, I guess, you know, for lack of a better example, the car wash in the series Breaking Bad. Yeah, we're going to have Walter White tell us that he's actually laundering millions of dollars from making methamphetamine, and he's going to tell the government that he's doing it to launder all that money. That's not going to happen. I can't believe that anybody in law enforcement would tell the Congress, oh, this will work. We'll catch the bad guys this way. Do you think I'm right?
Yeah, well, of course, law enforcement's going to want whatever. They're going to want to police. Like, if think about it. If you work for the FBI and someone says to you, hey, do you want an unlimited database with all the private information of every business owner in America? Will that help you do their job? You know what they're going to say? Oh, yeah, that'll help. Do that for me. But, you know, we do. It's Congress's job. It's lawmakers' job to balance personal privacy and excessive burden with the police state and law enforcement. So they have to say, you know, is it worth it? Is there bang for the buck? It's funny you mentioned it, whether or not it's going to catch anyone for all the cost it's going to be. We had FinCEN itself estimated $77 billion in costs over 10 years for small businesses to comply with this. And when this was going through and realized this thing might pass, we said to the authors, hey, why don't you do a cost-benefit analysis, include a cost-benefit analysis in this bill, and if it comes back as not being worth it, you can kill it. And they go, well, no, that's a poison pill. And if a cost-benefit analysis is a poison pill, what should that tell you about the piece of legislation you're trying to pass?
Yeah, it tells me it's an extraordinarily bad idea. And I agree with you. There are lots of people in law enforcement that say, yeah, it might be handy from time to time. But I'd love to know, since this thing has been in effect, can they actually point to one case where they actually were able to find a bad guy or a bad operation because of this?
That would be a great question. I'd love to see them point it out, too, because I know there's been congressional hearings where those things are asked, and usually FinCEN will hide behind the veil of privacy and say, well, you know, that's confidential, and we can't tell you in a public hearing. We'll have to tell you.
Well, you know how I'd ask it, Jeff, is I'd say to them, bring us a case and just tell us somewhere in America we found a business, XYZ business, was laundering money or was doing this or was doing that, and we were only able to find out about it because of the BOI. And if we hadn't had the BOI, it would have been a lot harder to find the bad guys. I'd be willing to bet they'd have a tough time coming up with even a generic example where they don't reveal the name of the business or the other personal information.
I'm with you, Lars. I don't think it has, for the cost it is, I don't think it's really having any effect. And, I'm with you. I'd love to see them produce some document, something I think folks, I know at Capitol Hill have even been calling for years, and FinCEN hides behind this veil of secrecy so they don't have to show their work.
Well, wouldn't it be interesting, too, to take individual members of Congress, especially those who have business interests on the outside, and some of them do, and say, okay, Congressman, let's take your information and let's put that out in front of the law enforcement folks and see if you think that it's worth it for you to give up that information and treat you like a criminal just because you won't give the information to the U.S. government. That's Jeff Braben, who's VP at the National Federation of Independent Business. Jeff, thanks very much. I appreciate the time. We'll get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network, providing honestly provocative talk to the Pacific Northwest states.
Adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. This segment of the show on the Radio Northwest Network is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists, Oregon Medical Centers. And our X poll today, should Trump or the Democrats get the blame for millions of Americans who stand to lose SNAP benefits this weekend? That includes about, 42 million people in America, apparently the majority of whom are not Americans. They're not citizens. They're not green card holders. They are instead foreign nationals who are getting their groceries paid for by American taxpayers, which I think is an extraordinarily bad idea. But Should Trump or the Democrats get the blame for millions of Americans losing SNAP benefits this weekend? My answer would be Trump, not Trump, the Democrats. The Democrats have control of the entire process at this point. Republicans have voted and passed a bill in the House to fund the government. That happened all the way back in July of this year. And then the Democrats refused to vote for that bill. They not only refused leading up to the end of the federal fiscal year at the end of September, but they've also voted 13 times in the month of October. And they have said, nope, we will not fund the government. So therefore, SNAP benefits, which ordinarily, if you're on SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, you would get your food stamp benefit on November 1. That would be this weekend. You're not going to get it. And I'm already seeing people who are on SNAP benefits right now saying, well, if you don't give me my SNAP benefits, I'm going to go to the grocery store and I'm going to steal my food anyway. I would suggest you don't do that, because I understand that, and I've seen it myself, you see people walk out of stores with a grocery cart full of things and the security guards simply ignore what's going on. I have a feeling that a lot of the grocery stores are anticipating what's going to happen this weekend. And if the SNAP benefits do not appear, because the Democrats have decided a calculation, they have figured out that if they can deny hungry Americans and hungry non-Americans those SNAP benefits, the Democrats think that that is going to translate into votes for them, because they believe that they're going to be able to blame Donald Trump. In fact, I've already seen the messaging going out on social media, and the mainstream media is not doing much to correct this impression either. They should understand Donald Trump does not control the federal budget. Donald Trump can sign the budget that Congress gives him if they give him a budget. They have passed a budget, a continuing resolution, through the House of Reps, as I said, months ago. The Senate could pass it right now. What they need is seven more Democrats to vote for it. And the Democrats have said, we're not voting for a new federal budget unless you give us $1.4 trillion in new spending over the next 10 years. Well, the Congress has already said, no, we're not going to do it. I think the Democrats did a bad calculation. In the past, they've always been able to count on the Republicans to lose their backbone, lose their spine, and simply cave in and give in. I don't think that's going to happen this time around. So, would you blame Donald Trump or the Democrats for the SNAP benefits that are going to disappear this weekend? You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's poll was a split decision. Would you support Donald Trump running for a third term? Yes, I understand the Constitution. He can't legally or constitutionally seek a third term, nor can he even run as vice president. He can't run as a vice presidential candidate, because the key criteria to be vice president of the United States, you have to be qualified to be president of the United States. Donald Trump is in his second term as president, which means he does not qualify to be a vice presidential candidate, because he could never serve as a vice president who's already served two terms as president, would not be able to serve as president, which means he doesn't have the minimum criteria to actually be able to run as vice president. But that's the question. Well, it came out 51% of you said no to the idea, even though it's only a theoretical idea, of a third Donald Trump term. 49% of you said yes. I did want to mention this about Seattle and Amazon. Amazon is now planning to replace 14,000 corporate workers, and they're going to replace them with artificial intelligence. They confirmed today, that they are cutting 14,000 corporate jobs. And why? Beth Galletti, who's senior vice president at Amazon, said the layoffs are part of a broader strategy that will likely slash 30,000 positions, or about 10% of their entire corporate staff. Here's the quote. This generation of AI, artificial intelligence, is the most transformative technology we've seen since the internet, and it's enabling companies to innovate much faster than ever before. Galletti wrote a memo to their employees. We are convinced that we need to be organized more leanly, fewer laborers, and more ownership as we move quickly as possible to serve our customers and business. She said hiring will continue in some areas, but that the corporate workforce will likely go down by about 14,000 roles. What's interesting about this to me especially is that if you've been concerned as a blue-collar worker that AI was going to replace your job, apparently a lot of the white-collar jobs are going to get the axe first, not the blue-collar jobs. Amazon has about 350,000 total corporate employees. It sounds like they're going to get rid of about 10% of them. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.